What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
New York City Mayor Zohran Kwame Mamdani has big issues to contend with. Perhaps one of the most massive is the long-troubled New York Police Department, their human rights violations, mass surveillance system, Zionist police commissioner, and powerful police association. But will he? And what's at stake if he does or does not take the department head-on and do so early in his administration? Joining us to discuss is Ollie Winston, a journalist who reports on policing, protest movements, and national security, with work appearing in outlets including The Guardian, The Atlantic, and The New York Times. He recently wrote several articles, including Zohran Mamdani's inheritance of the NYPD surveillance system and NYPD sued over possible records collected through Muslim spying program. Welcome back to the show, Ollie. How you doing? Happy New Year.
I'm good. How are you, Kat? Happy New Year to you, too.
You know, hanging in, hanging on. Mm-hmm. Sort of off with a bang to 2026.
No kidding.
Ali, Eric Garner, Amadou Diallo, Sean Bell, Eleanor Bumpers, I mean, some of the most prominent names of people murdered or set in motion to die, like Khalif Browder, by police, were impacted, intercepted, engaged by the New York Police Department. I want to start our conversation with you by you helping us paint a picture of the department that Mamdani is inheriting. And we could do it inside of the buckets that you address in your articles and that I just sort of uplifted in the introduction, because they're sort of my favorite to talk about. How about we start with the police association? How powerful are they?
So it's interesting. The NYPD's unions, there are several unions. Policemen's Benevolent Association, Patrolmen's Benevolent Association represents rank and file. Sergeants, lieutenants, captains, they all have their own union. So it's different than most police departments. There's several. And that's due in large part to the size, the sheer size of the department. It's 35,000 officers. It's bigger than the Italian military, budget running, depending on how you count it, between 5 to 11 billion, if you count in sunk costs, pensions, capital expenses, equipment purchases, versus just personnel and operational cost. They have their own intelligence division. They have detectives stationed, thanks to donations through the nonprofit police foundation, which we can get to later. They have detectives stationed in at least 10 countries overseas. That's part of a post 9/11 intelligence program. No other police department in the United States is like it. That being said, we are talking about a department where, due to the immediate predecessor of Zohran Mamdani, Eric Adams, the department was run by a cabal of incredibly corrupt, abusive, violent, and, you know, I mean, I don't know how to put it. Like, several of them were sexual predators. Like, these are the commanders who ran the police department immediately beforehand. So the department actually has less political capital than it has in a long, long time. Zohran Mamdani is the first mayor to win the office who has not been in the pocket of the police unions. Bill de Blasio ended up being in the pocket very quickly, but basically David Dinkins is the last time that there was a mayor who's this progressive in charge of the city. The difference now is that he is also the first mayor in over 30 years to not discuss public safety as a main part of his platform, right? Affordability, cost of living, housing, these were all Mamdani's main planks. And public safety really took a backseat during the campaign. And it's interesting because this is the opposite of 4 years ago, 8 years ago, 12 years ago, and the other prior mayoral elections. So police unions have been more muted in the city's politics than I've ever seen them, frankly.
What your answer just like sort of threw me off of the script, because there's other places I want to go. Ali, one of your buckets.
No, thank you.
One of your buckets of expertise is reformation of police departments. Mm-hmm. You know a little bit about that. When you're talking about this kind of a behemoth of an institution as the NYPD, from your perch, from your perspective, where would a mayor even begin?
It starts with making your own appointment as commissioner and setting out, and taking stock of where the department is currently, what sort of issues have arisen, looking at the statistics, the numbers, the indicators about, okay, violent crime, misdemeanor crime, felony crime, misdemeanor crime, you want to understand those. But you also want to understand who's getting stopped and frisked. The police department stop and frisk program under the Bloomberg administration in the 2010s was wildly unconstitutional. They stopped and frisked almost 700,000 people in, I believe, 2012 was the peak of the program. And at some point, young Black and Latino men who were the targets of this program, some had been stopped several times in 1 year for nothing, just for existing as a person of color in New York City in a certain neighborhood. The vehicle stops are at highs that they've never been at beforehand. So stop and frisks on the street or down vehicle stops are at record highs. They're on track to break it. Uses of force, which are also another major indicator of the department's conduct, those are also at highs that have not been seen since the department started keeping use of force records in 2017. That's how bad, that's how backwards this police department is. One thing to understand about the New York City Police Department, people think about it as, oh, they think about it as it's represented on television, high tech, sophisticated, well-trained. This place is ass backwards. The department didn't get email for officers until the 2014 or 15. It is a huge entity that changes very slowly. And that's part of the reason why many of the institutional problems here about racialized policing, institutionalized Islamophobia, abusive culture, corruption, overtime fraud, that's why they're able to persist, because you have over 100 precincts and commands. It's just a massive organization. We are looking at complaints, civilian complaints against police. They're at highs not seen since the height of the stop and frisk era in 2012. So there are real problems here that have not been addressed. People are complaining about it. And they just have not broken through the media narratives, because Eric Adams, the predecessor, was elected on a wave of, for two reasons. One, there was a wave of pandemic era social disruption disorder. Crime did increase nationwide. It is now decreased nationwide. And New York City's statistics are rising and falling on the national trends, right? 20-year decrease in felony crime. That's on average with the national trend. But Adams was also elected because of infighting in the progressive movement and conflict between two progressive candidates in a ranked choice election. He was almost a mayor by accident. And during his time, the police department, as I've mentioned beforehand, the people who he chose to run it, one of whom was involved in a de Blasio era corruption scandal and barely escaped a federal indictment by the skin of his teeth. They just basically turned the department into a machine for profit, nepotism, favoritism, and also like very overtly politicized policing. They went back to Giuliani style tactics, to Bloomberg style tactics. That's why you're seeing these complaints rise. Their media narratives around the NYPD do not comport with what I just described. You'll see bits of this reflected in outlets like The City. The Daily News will pick this up. Every now and then the New York Post will pick it up. But by and large, this is not the narrative of the city that the much reduced press corps here want to push.
You started off by talking about choosing a police commissioner in alignment with your values. Jennifer Tisch, who is she? How'd she come to power? Who's her family? She was the police commissioner before Mamdani took office. She remains a police commissioner by his choosing.
Jessica Tisch is from an Upper East Side family of very wealthy New Yorkers. I believe their family were from Ukraine. They're Jewish. They are the heirs to the Lowe's fortune, so they control hotels, movie theaters, real estate. They're amongst the city's quote-unquote permanent government of families that run real estate empires here and heavily influence politics. Her mother and father sit on a number of very influential boards, including local public television station here, the public library. Her mother was on the New York State Board of Regents. She ran the Board of Regents as its head. Their names are on the galleries, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the Metropolitan Opera, Lincoln Center, the Performing Arts Center in the Upper West Side, Manhattan. They're extremely prominent. And she also has relatives on the board of the New York City Police Foundation, which channels money, technology, and and other political influence to the police department through a nonprofit. Her family are also hardcore Zionists. Her grandfather set up the Jewish Agency, which paid to send Jews to settle in Palestine while it was under the British mandate in the 1930s. They continue to support the project of the Israeli state and Zionist organizations. Her brother actually called Zoran Mamdani an enemy of the Jewish people at a gala dinner in December for a Jewish nonprofit, Jewish poverty charity, anti-poverty charity that he runs. They're deeply wound into New York City's power structure. She was appointed as a intelligence analyst to the New York City Police Department's intelligence division in the late 2000s after one of her uncles on the Police Foundation board called then Commissioner Ray Kelly and said, Jessica wants to work for the police department, give her a job. So she got a job. She had a post doing intelligence analysis of Salafi terrorist threats to the police department with no Arabic language capability, right? No background in it. So she started out, and this is important because the police department's intelligence division in the 2000s and 2010s was engaged in the mosque breaking program, a program of blanket surveillance of New York City's Muslim community, as well as Muslim communities in the entire Northeast, not just the tri-state area, for the intent of detecting any potential follow-up attack by Al-Qaeda or its affiliates or other jihadis in response to September 11th. The program yielded no leads and was the subject of intense scrutiny and backlash when it was revealed by the Associated Press in the early 2010s. That's her background. She migrated then through the civil service in the police department. Kelly appointed her to a planning position in the counterterrorism division, where she used federal funds to build out the Ring of Steel and later the Domain Awareness Center, which is New York City's fusion center, where the police department feeds in surveillance camera feeds from around the city, gunshot license plate reader data, gunshot detectors, biometric sensors. Over time, they've added artificial intelligence capabilities that are, you know, able to do motion sensors, that are able to track individuals by object, color, item of clothing through a crowd. They use facial recognition there. They say they don't use live facial recognition there. There are conflicting reports about that. They definitely do post facto. Basically, she set up the NYPD's surveillance center and capabilities that are really remarkable now. And I wrote about for Wired right after the election. That's something that Mamdani will have to deal with. So she was appointed sanitation commissioner after running during Eric Adams's administration. She ran the Department of Information Technology under de Blasio. Mixed reports about her actual capabilities, but because of her family's money and influence, they donated $1.3 million to Cuomo, to Mamdani's rival in the mayoral election. And their connections, both in the city's political structure and in the media world, she actively courts press and is very aggressive about this. I've seen this over years. There's some stuff that happens behind the scenes that's pretty eye-popping. It's not been reported out. But she is seen as a heavy hitter politically, right? And her mother does have influence. She's never won a campaign. She's never campaigned for office, but she's kind of become this technocrat who's appointed through three different administrations into different roles. Adams appointed her as his police commissioner after, his third police commissioner quit under a cloud of scandal and disgrace. This is kind of a revolving door under Adams, and she was seen as stability to the institution. And Mamdani decided to hold Tish over. It's unclear as to why he did this, considering that she represents the city's landlord interests and is her class, that's her alignment. As a police commissioner, she is quite retrograde. She believes that she has stated many times that the New York State's Raise the Age Act, which changes the eligibility of juveniles for prison time, it just basically means that they have to be pushed in towards diversion programs as opposed to hard time. California has done similar things. She believes that that's responsible for the pandemic era rise in crime. There's ample data and studies indicating the opposite is true. Mamdani and her also clash on the issue of Israel and Palestine. Mamdani is a vocal advocate for the Palestinian people and an opponent of the genocide in Gaza and the occupation. Tish's family are hardcore Zionists. When she was sworn in as police commissioner, she wore a blue Star of David over her sweater. She's the first commissioner in New York City's history, 150-odd year history of the police department, to wear religious iconography while being sworn in. So that's who they are, and that's how she got there. She is the first police commissioner to be held over in 60 years. John Lindsay was the last mayor to do the same. He kept his predecessor's commissioner for 6 months. And it's unclear. The reasons stated appear to be that she's dealt with quote unquote corruption in the department, which is just not true, right? There's a scandal that's outlined in a number of lawsuits by former commanders where they allege that ranks of lieutenant and higher were being sold during the Adams administration for $15,000 a pop. Right. And there's been no accounting of this. Mamdani's people, Mamdani has very clear, unclearly, his ill-defined policies about public safety and police corruption, even though he spoke against the Muslim surveillance program. He has not staffed up his mayoralty on public safety. They didn't start addressing these questions seriously until recently, when he's been pressed on this during on the campaign and in, you know, press appearances since the victory. He has basically said, we're not going to do stop and frisk. We're not going to do quality of life policing. We're not going to do broken windows. That's what the police department is doing. At a press conference yesterday, Mamdani essentially said that we will not change what's happening now. Our current approach is fine. He stood next to Commissioner Tisch and Governor Hochul, who is a huge supporter of Tisch. I think it's because she wants to head off any sort of challenge from Tisch and her parents and her relatives for office. And they basically said, you know, things are fine right now. He will come under a lot of pressure, though. This has really upset his base. And in particular, he has vowed to, one of the few things that he vowed to do is disband the Strategic Response Group, a combined counterterrorism and anti-protest squad set up under Bill de Blasio by former Commissioner William Bratton, the architect of zero tolerance policing. And the SRG is at the center of every single bit of protest-related violence running back to its creation, but especially during the George Floyd protests and the demonstrations over the genocide in Gaza over in 2023 through the present, pretty much. Tisch doesn't want to disband them. He said he will, but again, early signs are that, and there is pressure from the city council to strip the SRG of their responsibilities. But, you know, it's really, this is not a major part of his campaign or his public image. And it does appear that up to present, he has wanted to run away from the issue and therefore allowed Tisch, the New York Post, the Manhattan Institute, and the city's reactionary forces that are aligned with the police department's status quo to set the agenda. So it's a huge vulnerability, and it's a sign of his inexperience.
I'm just going to say it. A sign of his inexperience, or you think he's scared? Do you think he's scared of what happens to him? We see what happens, right? By even smaller institutions of policing, to folks that dare to challenge them. NYPD moves as though they're, you know, immune from any type of accountability. And to your point, they and the people associated with them wield great power. I'm not saying that as an excuse or justification. I'm just, if you're Mamdani and his team, right? And we see this over, Ali, you and I have seen it over and over again with folks that are progressive, that once they get into office, right, this issue of violence by the state, right, they don't want to deal with. And when they do, we can take, you know, here in Oakland, where we had a city council that has amnesia now, but did in fact vote to divert money away from the police department. There was an all-out nationally fueled attack on those elected officials. How much do you think that's informing what he's doing?
I think there are a few things. There's a couple ways to slice this problem. Number one, he's young. He was a state assembly member. He's never been in an executive position. So he's always campaigned as a legislator, right? It's a different job than being an executive, than running an agency. Number two, he has not dealt with the police department beyond his experience growing up here in the city, going to school here and then living here as an adult. But And then seeing, you know, he was here during 2020. He saw the violence of the police department. He did condemn it. He made some very strong statements about the NYPD, its views on race, its views on the LGBT community, its treatment of First Amendment activity, its treatment, its surveillance and abuse of the Muslim community here, which, by the way, is 1 million strong. It's changed. New York City is a different place than people think. And that's part of the tension between Tish and Mamdani, that he's a representative of this rising population in New York City. And she represents a portion, not all, but a portion of the kind of more staid Jewish community that's been here for well over a century. Right. And there's ways in which that it's not a monolithic community at all, but that's certainly what she's seen as representing. I think there are a couple of things. One, he hasn't experienced the police department, and it is an intimidating force, right? Two, his advisors, he's advised by Patrick Gaspard, and a lot of his advisors are de Blasio era people or Obama world folks. So they're not progressives. These are centrists. And that's, I think, something that people really need to understand is that since he won the primary, these folks have become central to his operation. And they go by the abiding political wisdom, which is that, oh, well, you have to give concessions to the police department. You have to, you know, policing is not a pressing issue. That doesn't have to be at the forefront of your campaign or your legacy or your image. But in New York City, the police department is the central institution of government here, as it is in any major American city, but more so here than anywhere else. There are beekeepers in the police department. They handle almost every single job that they can find, because for them, it's about money. It's about overtime. It's about presence in city government and authority and getting to make their own policy. They've run themselves since time immemorial. And that, I think, is really important, that their political wisdom that he's going on is conventional political wisdom when it comes to the police department. I do think that the level of influence they have traditionally held, both, and the support that they garner from News Corp, from the New York Post, from Fox News, is also potentially intimidating. But also, you know, there's a way in which addressing there's a way in which his campaign is more oriented towards, and I'm saying this as a New Yorker, someone who's born and raised here, there's a way in which his campaign is oriented towards national politics. And sometimes it touches on local politics, but the core issues in New York City, affordability, policing, housing justice, he only takes some of them because, I hate to say it, they're not hot button issues nationally. And policing is seen as a losing issue after 2020, 2021, and the backlash that's been pushed really heavily to the George Floyd movement on a national basis. If there is, and odds are, if he serves out his full term and, you know, serves out another term, there will be an Eric Garner. There will be a Sean Bell. There was a guy who was killed by a cop after, you know, he rode by them on a moped last summer and was killed after a cop threw a cooler at him, hit him on the head, and cracked his skull and broke it on the sidewalk. If there is an awful but lawful type incident, or an Eric Garner incident, or somebody's just murdered in cold blood by a cop, that will change his mayoralty in a split second. And it's a big risk to take. And every day that he continues with the visibly retrograde policies of Eric Adams and his cabal that ran the police department, that risk increases. Does that make sense?
It does to me. I'm sure it does to our listeners. Ali, I got to let you go, but consider yourself our New York dude on these issues. And hope
as always.
Thanks for reaching out. Appreciate you.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.